This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold.
Welcome to the Paranormal Podcast. I am Jim Harold, and I am so glad to be with you today. And I am really glad to be with you today because this is an interview that I've been looking forward to for a long, long time. We're going to be talking today to Ann Serling, the daughter of the legendary writer, Rod Serling. And she's out with a new book called As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. It's a memoir of her remembrances and her insights on Rod Serling. Let's tell you a little bit about Ann before we get started. Before becoming a full-time writer, Ann Serling was an early childhood teacher with a Bachelor of Arts degree in elementary education from Elmira College. She serves on the board of directors of the Rod Serling Memorial Foundation and is involved with the Rod Serling School of the Arts Fifth Dimension Program. She lives in New York. You can visit her at annserling.com. That's Ann with an E. Or on Facebook. Ann Serling, thank you so much for taking time today.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess we could start on the subject of the book. Why did you feel compelled to write this book, and why now?
Well, I'd originally started another book about 6 years after my father died called In His Absence, and I was still so grief-stricken, I wasn't ready to finish that book. But because I find writing cathartic, as my dad did, I decided it was finally time to write this. And there were also things that had been said about my father that described a man that wasn't the person that I knew at all, and I decided it was time to set the record straight.
Now, for those who may not be as familiar, Rod Serling died at a very young age in the mid-70s. He was just a little over 50, if I'm correct.
Just 50.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you just wonder, I mean, the legacy that he left behind, how much more he could have accomplished had he had, a more normal complement of years on this planet. So it is a loss, of course, the greatest loss for you and your family, but I think a loss for all of us. And just personally, I've said this many times on the program, we've been doing this program for 8 years, and I've repeatedly brought up the Twilight Zone and the work of Rod Serling, and it's just a great honor to talk to you today about him. Now, let me ask you this, because it struck me, I remember seeing replays of things like Requiem of a Heavyweight, or for a Heavyweight, and things that Rod Serling had done before The Twilight Zone. And really, he was, along with Paddy Chayefsky, the biggest TV writer out there in a different time. And many of the people who are listening to this may not, you know, I don't have direct memories of it. I certainly have knowledge of it. But some people may not even realize there was a rich career for Rod Serling before The Twilight Zone. And it was a different era. It was the golden age of television, many people call it, where you had shows like Playhouse 90. Can you talk a little bit about Rod's career in television and kind of how television was in the early days in the 1950s?
Well, I don't know how much I can say to that. My dad actually, I can offer this. Originally, my father was going to major in phys ed, and then when he got out of the war, he was still so traumatized that he switched to language and literature. And while in college, he worked at a radio station and wrote scripts and won a prize, which I think sort of solidified his feelings that he wanted to become a writer. The first big success he had was Patterns, followed a few years later by Requiem for a Heavyweight.
Yeah, and it's amazing because in that day, live TV ruled. You know, there was, you would watch, and it was serious programming, much of it. For example, Requiem for a Heavyweight is not idle entertainment. There's certainly a message there. And can you talk about that a little bit? Because sometimes, I mean, we're doing the paranormal podcast here, and typically we talk about things that are spooky and so forth. And certainly that was a component of your dad's work in The Twilight Zone, later on The Night Gallery. But really, at the heart of your dad's work, I think there's a lot of societal messaging, a lot of morality plays, a lot of parables. Can you talk about that side of your dad, because I think that's something that gets lost. It strikes me that maybe sometimes we kind of look at the caricature of Rod Serling standing in the black suit, The Twilight Zone, and certainly that persona has made an indelible mark. But it was so much more than that. He really had a message in his writing, didn't he?
Right. You know, and because he dealt with the human condition and social and moral issues, I believe that that's why his writing has stood the test of time. There's a program in Binghamton, New York, where all the fifth graders watch The Twilight Zones, and through these stories they learn about prejudice and scapegoating and bullying. And I believe actually this would have been my father's greatest accolade, this program with these magnificent teachers.
Go ahead.
Because, you know, all of these Twilight Zones, well, the great majority do deal with social issues, and that's why actually he started writing The Twilight Zone, to get these messages across and under the radar of censors and sponsors.
I was reading in your book, and I highly recommend this. If you are a fan of Rod Serling, his work, you have to read this because it shows an entirely different side of the man, plus it's some great inside information. And really his frustration with the censors, I was reading about, he was trying to do a teleplay on the Emmett Till case, and he had to change the characters and change the setting. And by the time that he was done, the censors and the sponsors had watered it down so much that he was not happy with it at all.
Right. He ultimately said that, then he tried to write another show, and he said that his script had turned to dust, but he was extremely frustrated because he felt so strongly about the Emmett Till murder.
Now, and so I guess he decided to do The Twilight Zone, and in that, and much as I think maybe not to as great extent, but Gene Roddenberry did years later, you might not be able to tackle something directly, but if you put it in the year 2050 and make it an alien rather than a, I think your dad's words were something along the lines, rather than a Republican or Democrat, there's a lot more that you can say.
His quote was that he discovered that an alien can say what a Democrat or a Republican couldn't.
And I have to ask you, now it's interesting to me, what is your, and I do want to get on to more the personal side of Rod Serling, because it's really remarkable and really kind of against type, the kind of dad he was and the kind of interactions you describe in the book. But what's your reaction today when you turn on the TV and there's a Twilight Zone staring back at you? What thoughts run through your mind?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I didn't watch a lot of the Twilight Zone while my father was alive, and it wasn't until after he died that I started to watch, and more to see him than the actual show. You know, when I turn them on now and I see them, I feel incredibly lucky that I can find my dad there or see my dad there.
And
no one would have been more surprised than my dad that, you know, these shows are still running all these decades later.
Yeah, I'm just going to be turning 44 here soon, and I didn't discover the Twilight Zone until the 80s. And ever since then, it's been a staple and definitely one of my favorites. And now the streaming services have it where you can pull it up at any time. It's a beautiful thing because I've gotten my kids into it. So it is really a multi-generational thing. And one thing that struck me recently, I don't know if it was a Writers Guild or someone recognized the Twilight Zone as one of the top three or four shows of all time Yeah. Well, the remarkable thing about this, I read a piece that was written about that. And I know one of the ones that ranked ahead of, and even though I love the show, I disagree that they ranked ahead of Twilight Zone was Seinfeld, for example. But the writer made the point that the Twilight Zone was the only series in the top echelon, in the top two or three, that was really, you know, has some age on it. I mean, we're talking about 60 years here. And the thing is to be that high up after 60 years, really, it's number one. Because as much as I love Seinfeld, 50 years from now, people might not be getting yada, yada, yada. But they're going to be, they certainly be getting, don't go, it's a cookbook. And they'll still get that. So I think it's really probably the best written show of all time. And really, your dad, even though he was a personality of many people, I mean, quite frankly, many people that watch The Twilight Zone probably don't even realize he wrote most of the stories, and he was primarily a writer. Most people think of him as a TV personality. But as a writer, I would think to him that would have to be the greatest compliment.
He would have been extremely humbled and grateful.
We're grateful to have Ann Serling as our guest on this week's Paranormal Podcast. We'll be back with more right after this message.
You, yes, you are missing out. If you aren't a Paranormal Plus Club member, you're missing out on hundreds of classic Paranormal podcast and campfire episodes, plus hundreds of Plus Club-only shows like Ghost Insights, UFO Encounters, and Conspiracy Corner. Add in virtual video meet-and-greets with Jim, plus live and archived paranormal courses, and it's a no-brainer for any real Jim Harold fan. It's the Paranormal Plus Club, with monthly and yearly membership options available. Stop missing out. Go to jimharold.net now and click on the big green button to go plus.
Our summer sale is continuing, now extended through July 14th. Get 15% off your new monthly or yearly membership. Just type in the coupon code 15OFF. That's the number 15OFF. Upon checkout, and you'll get 15% off your monthly or yearly membership. And best of all, it recurs each and every year. Check out the Plus Club. And now back to the Paranormal Podcast. We're back on the Paranormal Podcast. Our guest is Ann Serling, and her new book is called As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. And it's certainly a privilege to have her on the program. You mentioned it before a little bit, but why do you think The Twilight Zone has held up so well after all these years?
Well, you know, again, because he dealt with human issues and social issues and moral issues, I also think that, you know, he owned the company, Cuga Productions, so he had complete creative control. I think it was, my dad wrote 92 of the 156 episodes. The other writers were equally fabulous, and I think it was a seamless team of writers combined with great direction and actors, and it was, I think that's what made it successful, too.
And I guess really no conversation of this would be complete without the acknowledgement of the passing of one of the great writers of The Twilight Zone, Richard Matheson, just in the last few days.
Right.
And he just had some, I believe it's Nightmare, I think 50,000 feet or 20,000 feet, I can't remember, but the one with William Shatner and the gremlin out on the wing, which is obviously one of the great classics of the show. So we salute Mr. Right. Matheson.
That was actually the first Twilight Zone I ever saw. I was about 7, and I was terrified, and it was of no consolation that my dad had not written it.
Well, you weren't the only one who was terrified, so I guess it was mission accomplished. Now, I want to talk about some of his other work, Night Gallery and things, but let's talk a little bit about how the man in the suit on the Twilight Zone differed from your dad, the dad that you knew in everyday life. Talk about your dad as a dad.
Yeah, my father was nothing like, you know, that image that you see walking across that soundstage. My father was very, very funny, very playful, very childlike in many ways. He would do anything for a laugh. He was a practical joker. Just, you know, not at all that dark, somber person that you see.
And one vignette you tell in the book, which I think is very, very illustrative of the kind of dad he was, is I think you call it the milk game. Can you tell us about the milk game?
All right. To get my sister and me to drink our milk, he would pretend to be sort of this monster, and he would say, "Don't drink my milk." And then, of course, the minute he would turn away, we would start drinking it until we were absolutely giggling in hysterics. And, and it worked.
And another thing that you talk about extensively in the book is this very special place. Your summer cottage. Can you talk about that? Because it just seems like it was a magical place for Rod Serling to escape and for your family to escape the pressures of L.A. and just have kind of an idyllic life for a few months a year in the summertime.
Right. It was actually on my mother's side of the family, built by her grandfather and her great-grandfather, where she went every summer of her life, and then my parents honeymooned there, and my sister and I and our family went also every summer. It was a place to get away from L.A. and, you know, the madness of that city and just relax and be on the lake and everything you can imagine about having a cottage on the lake.
Yeah, it's really great. You really bring those tales to life in the book. Now, so he was a caring dad. He was a loving dad. In the book you mentioned there are a lot of nicknames that he had for the family, and just it seemed like someone who, you know, you think of him as a very serious person when you see those teleplays and you see the Twilight Zone and so forth. But in real life, he was just a fun dad who apparently really loved his family and was very involved, although I guess at one point it had been said that he worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, but you never picked up on that he was a workaholic in any way. It seemed like he was very involved, wasn't he?
Right, yeah, that was the Mike Wallace interview where I think he was quoted, or he himself said that he worked 12 hours a day, but I never had the sense that my father wasn't available, and I think in part that was because he had an office in the backyard, and an office built in the backyard. And I always knew, you know, if I needed to go out there, I could. So he always felt very accessible. And then every day after school, we'd play basketball together.
Now, it sounds like a great, great childhood. Now, one thing that I don't think any discussion of Rod Serling, the person, would be complete without mentioning is that in much of his work, you'll see this theme about war and man's inhumanity to man. And I'm guessing that many people do not know that he was a combat veteran of the Second World War. And there's a story that you tell in the book where he came very close to losing his life when confronted by a Japanese soldier with a loaded gun. Can you talk about the impact that being a combat veteran had on him and his work?
You know, I wasn't really aware of what was going on, and I think that's in part, well, I was a child, but I also think that vets back then never talked about their experiences. You know, post-traumatic stress disorder wasn't even a term. I have a good friend whose dad was also in World War II who, at 88, is now just starting to talk about it. I did know that my father had nightmares because I remembered hearing him on occasion, and when I would ask him in the morning what happened, he would tell me that he dreamt the Japanese were coming at him. So clearly, you know, he was, like all vets, traumatized. And again, that was why he changed his major when he got out of the war from phys ed to language and literature, because he said, I needed to write, I needed to get it off my chest, I needed to get it out of my gut.
And after Twilight Zone, he went on to continue to be successful writing. And many of us know that movie. And again, I'm guessing a lot of people don't know, but Rod Serling was the writer behind The Planet of the Apes, that great movie with Charlton Heston, I believe 1968, that iconic ending. Talk about that movie a little bit and what his thoughts were on that and what kind of drove him into that particular project.
Right, that was an adaptation, but that was his original ending. He was the first writer brought on, and I guess my dad's script proved too expensive to do, so another writer was subsequently brought on, but again, it was my dad's ending.
Which, I'm not going to give up the ending in case any of you haven't seen it, but it is one of the great all-time endings of any kind of motion picture or anything, you know, you could compare it to if you're talking TV or movies. Really one of the great shocker endings. And maybe now it loses a little bit of its power from the sense if you know about it, yeah. But if you didn't know about it at that time, it had to be quite jarring.
Yeah, it was a great ending. I agree.
I showed it to my kids a few weeks ago. I said, you got to see this. This is just amazing. Now, as his career went on, he got involved with Night Gallery. Now, that show, I enjoy that show immensely. Sometimes it's, you know, it's lost in the shadow of the Twilight Zone. But can you talk about that program a little bit? Because I think there's some real classics on that show. Although, and I'm not sure, I may have missed this in the book, I'm not sure that he had the same creative control on that program.
Right, exactly. He didn't have creative control, and that proved to be extremely frustrating for him because he felt that ultimately it became a show that he didn't like it. That said, there were some great episodes. For instance, they're tearing down Tim Riley's bar. I think it's
yes.
A love script. And actually was nominated for an Emmy.
Yes,
there were a few others also, but ultimately, it was not a show he had any reservations about walking away from.
And Who were some of the actors that he professionally, and this may go beyond the scope of your book, but just some of the actors he really enjoyed working with that he thought brought life to his words?
Well, the one that comes to mind, Jack Klugman. I know Jack. That was, yep, there was a mutual respect.
In Praise of Pip, right?
Yes, In Praise of Pip and a Passage for Trumpet, I think. I think the majority of the actors he had a great deal of respect for, and so many got their start on Twilight Zone. Robert Redford, Burt Reynolds, I think. Several.
Yeah, Jack Warden was on that show. Gig Young was on that show. A lot of great actors that passed through. Anne Francis. It's funny. I will be watching them. And there's one or two with James West. And later on, he became Roscoe P. Coltrane on The Dukes of Hazzard. And it's kind of funny seeing him in a serious role. I tell my wife, there's Roscoe P. Coltrane. But anyway, a little bit of levity there. But go ahead.
And Carol Burnett also.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And Ed Wynn, the actor at that time who was nearing the end of his career. Fantastic episode.
And for the Angels, yes.
Yeah, fantastic. Just, you could just go on and on. In fact, the other day, we were walking into a restaurant. One of my kids mentioned the episode, and I can't remember it, where the guy thinks he's in heaven, but he's really in hell. We were talking about something. So that's how far on it's caught. And I'm sure it's going to continue throughout the generations to be appreciated, appreciated. Your dad's health. What kind of happened that precipitated his far too untimely death? I mean, it's just shocking. At just over 50, so much more he could have done. What happened?
Right. Well, just 50, and you know, he was hopelessly and helplessly addicted to cigarettes, and his own father had died when he was 52. So there was certainly a genetic predisposition to this.
Yeah,
and he had a heart attack. And back then, you know, he had open heart surgery, but back then in 1975, open heart surgery was brand new.
Right, and as you read, you just kind of think, well, what if it had been today? There's so much more that could have been done, possibly, and you just kind of ache just reading that that recounting. It's extremely sad. Now, I had read somewhere, and I don't know if it's in your book, I may have missed it. He had done the In Search of Ancient Astronauts and some other movies, I believe, as a narrator. Was he going to be involved in the TV series In Search of?
I believe so. I don't know a lot about that, but that's very familiar.
Yeah, and an interesting thing about that is that I often cite that program when I was a little kid, as an inspiration for delving into paranormal type subjects. So I guess second-handedly, your dad's partially responsible for my fascination and fascination of many of us in our generation with these kind of topics. But on a broader level, what do you think your dad would have ended up doing? What vistas do you think he would have broached? Where would have his career gone? Would he have written a couple of more years and decide to go into that the Good Evening and retire, or do you think he would have been writing up to the very end of his if he had a longer life?
Well, I don't think he would have retired. In fact, I frequently think how, you know, he was so prolific back then, how much more he would have been today with a computer. I know my dad wanted to write a Broadway play. He was looking forward to that, writing a novel. Just looking forward to a whole new chapter of his life.
Yeah, and it actually makes me angry when I read it that it was cut so horribly short that we didn't have that benefit. Now, here's something I'll ask you about. Maybe a lot of people don't ask about this, but I'm just curious. Did he talk about his persona, his on-screen persona, his voice persona? Because in later years, I mean, he hosted a game show, I believe the Liars Club, if I'm not not mistaken. He, as I said, he had narrated movies. I believe he narrated the Jacques Cousteau series.
Right.
Did he talk about that much? Did he enjoy that work, or is that just something he did to help supplement, or was it something that he enjoyed doing?
Well, the two you mentioned, the Jacques Cousteau narration, I know he loved. He was fascinated with that. And The Liars Club, which was a game show, he thought that was a lot of fun. Betty White was on that, and several others that I think were my dad's friends, and they just had a great time together.
Yeah, and I've not had the privilege to see those, but certainly we've heard his narration, and he just he was so good at it. And I think in some ways to his detriment that it's overshadowed his writing, because again, if you see a kid who's 15 years old and is familiar with watching The Twilight Zone again, he doesn't know, or she doesn't know, but he knows him as that great narrator of the Twilight Zone. But hopefully this book will help get the word out again and remind people what a fantastic writer that he really was. So what do you think that your dad's legacy is, and do you think that he would be happy with it?
Well, I think, again, that he would be stunned that he's remembered. He was quoted as saying that he didn't believe his writing would stand the test of time, and that he hoped, he was asked in an interview what he hoped people would remember Rod Serling the writer as 100 years from then, and he said he didn't care that they couldn't quote a single word of anything he'd written, but just that they could say, oh, he was a writer. So my dad would be, you know, just very humbled and grateful to be remembered all these years later.
And I've often wondered this question, and it could go for you or it could go for many people. What is it like to be the daughter of someone who is just so renowned, so well-known, so revered? Maybe you could talk a little bit about the positives and maybe a little bit about where it kind of makes things a little tougher, or does it? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think as a kid, at times it was tough. For instance, you know, when a mean boy on the playground asked me if I was something out of the Twilight Zone, and I didn't know what that meant because I didn't even know what the show was. So I had to mother. But, you know, I think it's much more positive. I hear from people all the time who tell me that how touched they were by my dad's writing, and how they would become writers themselves because he was such a great influence in their lives, and what a great man they thought he was. And it's just kind, lovely comments I get almost on Facebook on a daily basis.
Yeah, that has to be reassuring and make you feel very good about the work that he did. Now, you as a writer, how has it been to try to, you know, follow your own muse and write while, you know, a bit under the shadow of the great Rod Serling? How have you evolved in that journey?
Well, that was a little intimidating initially setting out. I used to just write poetry. But writing this book, you know, again, as I said, it's been just very cathartic, and I've gotten, you know, some really great feedback, and it's exciting. And you know, when people say your dad would be so proud, that just touches me greatly.
I definitely think he would. It is a great book. It is As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. The author is Ann Serling. She's joined us today. And where can people go on the web and catch up with everything you're doing and also pick up on the book?
I do have a website, annserling.com, A-N-N-E, and I'm also on Facebook. And the book is available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and other bookstores that are listed on the website.
I guess one final question is this. After people walk away from the book and everybody interprets books differently, what do you hope is the overriding take-home message for folks?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I really need to credit my editor with this, because when she read an early draft, she said to me, your grief is so central to this book, you need to be more open. And when I did a reading a few years ago at the Paley Center, a woman came up to me and told me her father was dying, and that after hearing me read, she knew that she'd be okay. And it was such a gift that, you know, my writing, my words had touched her in this way. And I'm hearing from people all the time that, you know, they're relating to the grief, and that's helped them. You know, it's so universal. So, you know, my hope would be that it does help people, because I got so stuck in my grief, and that's okay to get stuck. I also would hope that people get a better sense of, who are interested, get a better sense of who my dad was.
Well, it's interesting you say this. You don't know this, but my mom passed 2 months ago, and I found the book very relatable, even though I was lucky enough to have my mom for quite a while. Still, your mom's your mom, your dad's your dad, and when they pass, it's quite a shock and difficult to deal with. So I could relate, even though you obviously had a much tougher time from the standpoint of him going so young. So I thank you personally for that, and I thank you for taking time today. I am so excited to have the opportunity to speak with you today. I've been looking forward to it for weeks, and again, I'll just join the chorus of one of those people who just think Rod Serling is one of the greatest figures in American literature. I mean, it is for the screen. I mean, I know he wrote books as well, but predominantly for the screen, whether it's TV or film, and it's just an honor to talk to you and talk about his great work today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And thank you for tuning in to this very special edition of the Paranormal Podcast. I would appreciate it very much if you go over to iTunes and give us a rating, hopefully a 4 or 5 star rating if you feel that way about the show. If you feel the other way, well, be honest. Also, please give us a 2 or 3 sentence blurb about your thoughts on the show. That will help us greatly and increase our visibility among the millions who get their podcasts that way. We thank you for getting in to this podcast and tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time on the Paranormal Podcast. Have a great week, everybody. Now for the legal disclaimer. We do not accept money from publishers or content producers in exchange for interviews. However, as with most media outlets, in the majority of cases, we do receive complimentary copies of books and DVDs that we feature on our podcasts. Your purchases of books, DVDs, and other items via our Amazon.com links benefit Jim Harold and JimHarold.com and help us continue our programming. The sponsor messages you hear on the programs are paid endorsements, although we really do like them. For the full disclaimer, go to JimHarold.com, and thanks for listening.